Hey guys, my guest tonight, Dr. Simeon Hine, is going to talk about crop circles, UFOs, extraterrestrials, and other space things. We'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks, find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing? Yeah, you're wondering, why am I on at 7:30? I had a doctor's appointment I had to go to, and it was out of town, and coming back in the freeway from that city I was at, it can get really dicey and interesting. So that's why we're on at 7:30 tonight. Anyway, my name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento. If you think you might have a paranormal need, get a hold of us. Just look us up on social media. It's all good. I see the internet's running slow again today. There's still a lot going on this week, so if we have some miscues, if my voice goes weird, or my lips move, if my voice doesn't, or vice versa, that's why. Okay, getting on to tonight's show, our old friend Dr. Simeon Hine is with us, and we're going to be talking about crop circles and other ED-related things. And what I find interesting with this is I happened to visit a crop circle site here in California quite a few years ago, and I believe it ended up being debunked. As I was walking around, I did find a couple of boards that, see this, it says, why are we off like this? Wow. The internet's really bad. herky jerky. See, look at that. There's a delay. Anyway, so it ended up being debunked, and I had told my mother, because she had gone out to the site with me, I had told her about it, and I said, Mom, you know, I think this is going to be debunked because there's these big boards, and sure enough, within a couple of days, it was debunked. Okay, guys, I'm going to come back and just hang in there. Let me refresh here, see if I can get this shaky-jaky out. Hang on. I'm going to do a refresh. Okay, yeah, I want to do a refresh. It's the internet. The internet's having issues. Okay, without further ado, I'm going to bring Dr. Simeon Hine in. And like I said, we're going to have a great conversation about ETs and all that good stuff. So let's bring him on in.
How's it going? Hey, Charlotte. How are you tonight?
Good. It's good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I remember we had quite a conversation a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we had a grand old time. For the people that don't know who you are, can you please explain who you are, sir?
Oh, sure. Well, I got my education in sociology. I used to teach statistics at a university, and I realized that there were some shortcomings in how social science thinks about reality, especially how statistics are used. Mm-hmm. The idea of normal distributions, whether that really applies to a lot of our reality or not. Kind of the whole idea of making data fit a regression line, if reality is really based on those sort of averages, or are we using a type of mindset that we inherited from statisticians 100 years ago about the whole idea of normalcy and what averages, do averages really exist, or are we forcing reality to fit into a mindset of 150 years ago that is obsolete? So I realized even before I came across these topics that you're interested in, that the viewers are interested in, that we might be missing a big chunk of reality because we were attempting to use rather narrow, incomplete, maybe even incorrect mathematical models to fit our data.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
When we look at crop circles and things like that, have you personally seen any? Have you been out on scene to check them out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my whole book, Opening Minds, is about my experience with remote viewing and crop circles. Mm-hmm. And I started going there in 1997 and saw big, huge patterns like this that had been occurring for years. You know, many people have seen these types of shapes. Mm-hmm. And, at the beginning of my visit to the UK and going to see crop circles with a guy named Ron Russell from the Denver area, we didn't have any idea how they were made, what was making them, what they meant. But they got bigger and bigger over the years. The excellent book called The Secret History of Crop Circles by Terry Wilson. I don't have a copy with me here right now, but it's an excellent history of crop circles going back decades and decades to, I think it goes back, well, it goes back to, you know, medieval history, but most recently starting in the 1920s, 30s. And there's always been these anomalies associated with some crop circles, not every single one. And you mentioned one where there's human influence. There's no doubt that people started imitating these in the 80s and 90s, but it doesn't seem that's how it started. It was created by other types of phenomena over the years, going back quite a while.
Interesting. And do you think that these crop circles are done by aliens, or is people that's doing this?
It's both. And the main thing with crop circles is we tend to like simplistic thinking. We want to reduce everything to one type of explanation. But with crop circles, you have multiple causes of these. Some are indeed caused by these plasma vortices, weather phenomena, whirlwinds, and very strong types of vortical wind currents. I've seen those. I've been around those in the UK. Anyone who's been around farm areas in the US has seen these really rapid whirlwinds that come across the fields. And they can make some of the small ones, not big ones like this. But there is no doubt in my mind that UFOs are connected to them also. Just going through that book, The Secret History of Crop Circles, which it's good to read history books because it has experiences before you got there. I didn't get there till 1997 in the UK to see these. There are, just reading half of that book, going up to the 60s, I was counting every single case where there's at least 10 cases there where people saw UFOs, flying discs associated with some crop circles. The crop circles have been associated occasionally with animal mutilations. I've talked to farmers that have experienced that in their fields in BC, Canada. And even in my own interviews with witnesses, which I detailed in Black Swan Ghosts about my contacts over the years, just investigating these topics with witnesses to UFOs and allegedly extraterrestrials. We don't know exactly who these beings are. But there was one witness from Usquash, from North Idaho that was visiting Usk, Washington, Luis Vovez, who described to me seeing this flying disc in a falling leaf sort of wobbly pattern as it left the area over Usk where she was picking huckleberries with her brother. It flattened the field, she said, which is just what other people have described. So Charlotte, it's one thing to read about cases in a book, but when you're talking to a witness who said, yeah, that's exactly what we saw.
Right.
He said it did not create a crop circle. Let's be straight. What she saw was flattening of the meadow plants. I asked her how flat. She said flat as a pancake, 90 degrees. Now, that sounds to me very similar to what you read about in Secret History of Crop Circles and what witnesses occasionally describe So the UFO UAP phenomena is most definitely related to some of these crop circles, some of them. Mm-hmm. And just another example that's more well known, the Tully saucer nests, which mm-hmm. happened in Australia in the mid to late 1960s. People saw these UFO, UAP, whatever you'd like to call them, hovering over areas, marshy areas. And the grasses, when they went out there, were swirled around. So to answer your question, Charlotte, and it's a good question, some of them do seem to be created by UFOs, maybe mm-hmm. not intentionally. I think people might have assumed that this is some sort of intentional patterns. Mm-hmm. It could be. It seems to me from my research that at a very least, the propulsion systems of some of these objects mm-hmm. leave an impression on grain crops, on grasses and so forth in a vertical swirling pattern. And to me, that is the genesis of the crop circle phenomena in the early years, you know, from the 20s to the 1960s, you had those sorts of patterns.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense, though. I mean, if anybody's ever been to an airport even and been out on a tarmac, and the wash from the jet engines, I mean, it could almost blow you over. You know, the wind is so strong. So depending on wherever these things' propulsion system is, if it's on the bottom of them, then obviously as they do get closer down to these fields, they can smush all that down.
Right. Right. And so that could be some of them. And these UFO UAP technologies seem to produce it. Am I allowed to share my screen at all here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I go into settings or present. Let me just show you a picture of it's asking me to up. Oh, I don't have the permissions quite sit here. Let's see if I can do. Yeah. Okay. Let's see if this does it. Sure. I want to show you one that I saw a number of years ago. Oh, I think I need to, I will describe it to you. Okay. It says I would have to cancel and restart to show this.
Okay.
I've done it recently. I'm not sure why it didn't work. So, but in any case, this is a formation that I saw near Westbury, UK. And let me see if I can maybe perhaps. Yeah, okay, I can show it to you right here. Maybe it'll come through on the phone. Do you see that sort of pattern?
Oh, yeah.
That does not look like a man-made one to me at all.
No.
That looks because of the radial lay pattern flowing out from the center to the outside. It looks swept like it looks swept as if it's by winds or some sort of currents. I'm just going to show you a bigger picture of what it looked like. So you can see that there's even what we call the grape shot, mm-hmm. 50 feet away from the circle. And that has that pattern of the original phenomena where it just looks like it's swept by winds, by plasmas, by UFOs perhaps or something like that. However, I do have to say that towards the 80s and 90s, more and more people were making them. And they were not necessarily making them to try to fool people. Some of these researchers, like Matt Williams from the UK and others, Charlotte, told me they were started out as researchers like you and me.
Right.
And they wanted to see if they could even make something that looked even close to what they were finding out there. And sometimes it's pretty cold in the UK at night, so they kind of got tired of waiting around in the wee hours of the morning and the wind and the cold at the top of the downs up there. So they would make a small one, say, maybe if we make one, it would like, you know, encourage the circle making forces to respond to us, you know, like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, like, sure. You can understand this, like a type of communication. Yeah. And they found that the ones they made weren't half bad looking and mm-hmm. had helicopters circling over the next day. And look, they got attention. So they started making them bigger and bigger over the years, and they were surprised they could even do it. And they eventually ended up looking like this. So people did imitate this original phenomena and make them bigger and better and more precise, you know, the way humans like to do things. But here's the most important thing. And we mentioned this in the previous interview a few years ago. Even the man-made ones had these strange electromagnetic effects on cameras, batteries, computer equipment, electronics. In general, So the it seems like if you create these vertical swirling patterns in condensed matter physics, these are called phase singularities. Mm-hmm. These phase singularity type shapes seem to have some sort of profound impact on their environment, whether it's made by a whirlwind, a UFO, or you and me. And that's mm-hmm. what we found, is the man-made ones are real. Mm-hmm. They're real in their own way.
What brings the thought now, you know, with some of these, I'm not saying all of them or the possibility of there, when you were talking about, you know, the scientists creating these things, I keep thinking about the Nazca lines.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder with some of these crop circles, the ones that can't be debunked, if that's not what people are doing.
Yeah, some of them do resemble those sort of Nazca line shapes, if I'm not mistaken. Those are like hummingbirds.
Yeah.
Different shapes like that. But a lot of these are very much more like fractal spirals. And there's something about spirals that seem to have a geomagnetic effect on their environment. And fractal patterns in particular. Fractals meaning self-similar objects that look the same at a large scale or a small scale. And, you know, fractals are like our bronchial structure of lungs, branching trees and things like that. Yeah. Arterial structure, you know, veins and things like that. Smaller, so they reach all the cells. Yeah. So fractal structures are important in nature. And from my experience, those fractal type shapes, not the more stylized ones that look like animals and insects. Right. And there are plenty of those that showed up in the UK over the years that I got to see, which resemble a type of a certain object or a picture or an animal or something like that. But it was more these sort of geometric patterns that seem to be electrically active. And it's very strange for those of us who've grown up around electronics, like all of us have, you know, and are used to these devices just working pretty, you know, predictably day in, day out. I mean, we wouldn't have your YouTube show here if it didn't work reliably. Sometimes, like at the beginning of the show here, you got to reboot. But generally, it works. But when you're around these crop circles, stuff stops working, and it's the weirdest sensation because you're just in a wheat field. It's not like you're around a lot of wires or magnets. You would think wheat is pretty inert. I mean, it's made of cellulose. It's not like the most electrically active thing, but there you are, and your cameras do weird things. And we've had many crop circle tours over there where our tour guests experienced the strangest things happening to their cameras. I would say, Charlotte, one of the strangest things was a fellow. We went back to the hotel after being in a crop circle and sitting in a big crop circle for many hours. And the key in his pocket was now liquefied. And when he put it in the lock, it back at the hotel, the key bent.
Wow.
He bent. Now, that means there is some sort of important process going on related to physics, electromagnetics, and so forth. I mean, a little deeper than that, something related to a neutrino flux or something that is literally transmuting the metal. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is the entire research field of cold fusion, low energy nuclear reaction, which has many decades of research now, good research from researchers and organizations all over the planet, especially in Eastern Europe, interestingly enough, in Ukraine and Russia, and Japan and India, they have found that those processes create nucleonic transmutation of elements, literally alchemy, nuclear alchemy, and it causes this metal fracturing, softening of metals. Now, I can't prove that what was going on here, awfully interesting that something like crop circles would imitate the same effect that you got from the John Hutchinson fractured metal samples, the experimenter in Canada that was attempting to reproduce the Tesla effect from Nikola Tesla and successfully did it with his fractured metal samples, if people are familiar with those. And he created that purely with electricity, not with high temperatures, but the metal looks like it's melted. So that is another clue, I believe, that we're dealing with some underlying similar phenomena in something as seemingly far-fetched as crop circles, all the way back to low energy nuclear reaction, because you get some of the same effects. You get these weird effects on electronics, seemingly strange effects on metals and things like that.
So that's why, I mean, I would think that that's why people think that these things are extraterrestrial in origin, because you do get those weird effects in the middle of nowhere. But I mean, there's got to be something to it. I mean, it's like my mother walking across the room and touching the doorknob and there's a spark.
There you go. Now, that spark that you see touching a doorknob, or you can get it from your pets, and sometimes my favorite place to see it, when you're in bed at night and you pull up the sheets and you see all the little sparks.
We'll have to try that. I've never seen that.
That is micro ball lightning. I mean, we call it static, but nobody knows exactly what static is. It's a precursor to micro ball lightning. And micro ball lightning is the foundation of cold fusion, low energy nuclear reaction. Nice. You know, according to researchers like Takayaki Matsumoto, who passed away earlier this year, and many other researchers. So the fact that you brought up that little static charge that you see, that is the beginning of the whole phenomenon we call ball lightning. And you do see ball lightning around crop circles. And I've seen it myself in those areas. I've never seen it in the US, but I've seen it over in the UK a couple times. Even one of our tour guests photographed a tiny marble-sized blue orb in the grass at Avebury, where you have these ancient stone circles that are like thousands of years old, these big stone circles that, you know, that people constructed thousands of years ago. She saw this little orb ball lightning in the grass. So that is associated with crop circles too. And it's associated with a lot of other interesting phenomena. I mean, ball lightning, Charlotte, in and of itself is a whole entire area of investigation that is still quite mysterious, because there are no one can quite agree on exactly how it works and what causes it. But I think we can say at a bare minimum, it's a type of electromagnetic vortex. And that's what David Freiberger said from Stanford Linear Accelerator Center, SLAC, in Stanford, California. Funded by DOE, Department of Energy. This is not coming from left field or something. This is good old Department of Energy. And they conclude it's another type of electromagnetic energy that's extremely strong and has the ability to tear matter apart. They call it catalytic nucleonic decay, which means that the atoms are shredding apart. Well, you can see why a lot of this ends up in classified research.
Right.
So that's the fascinating thing, Charlotte, is just your interest in crop circles, and this started a couple of years ago when we started having our conversations about this.
Yeah, right.
Actually leads to some fascinating research in ball lightning and new types of electromagnetism, and even classified research that goes on at the Department of Energy.
Well, you know, there is something to it. I mean, even for ghost hunting, if we can get a day that's overcast and it's raining and there's thunder and lightning, all the more better, because the energy is higher in the air. And when we talk about this stuff, I don't think people realize how much static electricity is around us all the time.
Exactly. And just as you're saying, it varies and it can get charged up during thunderstorms. And that's often where you find ball lightning, but not always. It can just appear out of blue sky. You know, when you've been flying and they say we're getting clear air turbulence, and you look out the window and it's like blue sky, but the plane's going. That's clear air turbulence. You can get ball lightning out of clear skies too. It's not just thunderstorms. And that's the mystery of it. We understand when the lightning comes down, it's sort of creating electric charges in the earth and static buildup and so forth. But the ball lightning doesn't need that to form. It can just come out of, I was talking to another radio show host not too long ago. She said, I always wanted to have you on the show because I had this ball lightning experience in the Wind River Range near the Tetons in Wyoming. And she said, we were on an outward bound group and we were in the Wind River Range. For those who have been out there, being these beautiful mountain ranges in Wyoming, in Western Wyoming. And she said this ball lightning came just trundling down the path, almost as if it was walking towards them. And it's just kind of coming, ambling towards them down the path. What is this? And all of a sudden it exploded and knocked them all over. And they were out for a few minutes. They regained. It's extremely, for a small object, it's extremely powerful. It has 10 times the power of TNT for that size, something like the equivalent of 20 hand grenades, according to Air Force research, Air Force sponsored research, I should say. And so it looks, it can do, it's so unpredictable. It can do so many things. And to bring it back to crop circles, I think some of the crop circles, some might be created by this ball lightning. It doesn't always blow up like that at the end. It right. can just fade away. But it is something to watch out for and be a little careful of. So don't, if you see one of these, and by the way, that same Air Force response, that same Air Force sponsored research from J. Reese Roth, published in 95, said that 1 out of 20 Americans have seen ball lightning, but probably didn't know what they were looking at. So it's more prevalent than you would think. And again, it's related to all these phenomena, same sort of electromagnetic vortex at the core. You know, crop circles are almost like a schematic representation of ball lightning, in my view.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. I was just going to add to that. I've never seen ball lightning, but I had a client out in Rockland out here, and it's an area that's not known for stuff like that. They called it a fireball, but they said it went right down their hallway, shot right through their house.
Yeah.
When I start looking around, the power lines couldn't have been more than 20 to 25 feet away from the house.
Yeah.
And that's when I started. I asked him, and I said, what was the weather like?
What did they say?
They said it was overcast the day that it happened. And I said, well, you got your high power lines. You got, you know, this active weather. More than likely, that's what came through with ball lightning. You know, but it's for this area, it's really rare to see it.
Yeah, it is quite a phenomena. I mean, it can come off of power lines sometimes, but it's a free-floating fireball is the basic description. And it doesn't need anything after it's formed. It can survive for quite a while. The Russian research said it can exist for up to 4 months once it's created. That Charlotte, you'd have to agree, this is as strange as UFOs. And it's natural. It's endemic to Earth. I mean, it's this thing that can form off of power lines and then exist for months if it buries itself in a piece of metal. It could be in your wall. It's almost like supernatural the way, I mean, it's the strangest thing. So yeah, it can come off something, go through your home, come down a hall. And the way it interacts with people, it's bizarre. You know, when you read these reports, and there's a lot of different researchers over the centuries, actually, that have invented it. Started in 1823, the investigations of ball lightning by Arago in France. And the reports of it are the strangest things you can imagine. I mean, reports are that it can transport animals and people from one location to the other, that it can magnetize non-magnetic materials, including wood. It can make wood magnetic temporarily if it comes very close to it. And it can vaporize a necklace off of your neck without harming you, but the metal will be gone. It's just, I mean, what is that? It's totally transmuting the metal into some gas, and it's gone. Rings disappear. Sometimes it goes through windows. It can go through people. It can go through you. I don't advise that. But you've heard about Skinwalker Ranch. People have seen the show. I was just out in Vernal at Phenomicon, and there was always a lot of talk of that type of phenomena at Skinwalker Ranch. But at Skinwalker Ranch isn't the only place. You had Marley Woods in southern Missouri. Ted Phillips talked about that. He said he saw once where what he called an amber, they called them the ambers out there, it went over a picnic table, and the picnic table, even though it was chained down, started floating in the air. Now you could probably see why the Air Force is interested. We're talking
absolutely
anti-gravity.
Absolutely. I have to admit, I think I saw ball lightning once before as well up near the at the end of the foothills to literally, you know, the entrance to the big mountains. We were mm-hmm. doing a case up there, and the house was near a ravine, a big ravine, where a major river was running. And the gentleman had said, "Well, I'm seeing lights out over the river." And I said, "What do you mean?" Because you got to figure this is a cliff, so the river's like way down there. And he says, "Yeah, there's been some cars that have gone over that cliff." I'm thinking, you know, that the ghosts are coming from there. So we go out there, and we're standing out there, and sure enough, we could see these balls out there, like two balls floating around out there, just aimlessly.
You saw it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're one of these witnesses who've seen it, one of the 20 yeah. Americans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, were they just floating there? Did they move around, or are they stationary?
They were moving around. They were moving around down there, just kind of, you know, randomly moving around. But see, the thing to remember with this area, there's a lot of caves.
Yeah.
A lot of gold mines and stuff. So mm-hmm. you've got the material for the caves that when it rubs together or it comes in contact with water, right. you know, you're going to get different things that you see. And so that's part of that, too. And so
it is, yes.
I just thought it was so fascinating to see that. Yeah, I thought it was great to, you know, really fascinating to see that lightning.
Yeah, yeah, it can come out of mines. People have seen mm-hmm. that. You've got metals in there, which are a source of electrons. Mm-hmm. It appears before earthquakes. Some people have thought you could even create earthquake detectors by detecting balls of light and orbs before they happen. They tend to rise up to the tops of mountains and hang out there for a while. This is something that is more prevalent than people think. If you start asking people who go to haunted sites like you do, or even just hike outdoors, people have seen this but not known quite what they were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be one of the fundamental components of these phenomena, because you get these orbs and ball lightnings around haunted sites and ghost yes. sites. You yep. get it around Bigfoot and cryptid sites. You get it mm-hmm. around UFO and UAP type phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And you get it around crop circles too. And it seems to be the basis of a lot of LENR, low energy nuclear reaction experiments at a micro mm-hmm. scale in a lab. Mm-hmm. So this type of matter seems to be important to us mm-hmm. as a fundamental component of electromagnetism. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's not replacing Maxwellian electromagnetics, you know, James Clerk Maxwell that created mm-hmm. the laws of electromagnetics based on Michael Faraday's research into magnetic induction and motors and so forth. And, mm-hmm. and Maxwell figured it out. It's an extension of that. And I will say, it seems to be a fractal extension of Maxwellian electromagnetics. It's just taking that a little further. And instead of having these open electromagnetic fields, what are called pointing vectors, they are closed. They're not open. They're closed, and they go down all the way to the zero point, the quantum vacuum field. Uh-huh. And this is based on Russian research. I can go into it in more detail if you're curious, but
sure.
researchers in Russia, Soviet Union at the time. Soviet Union at the time. This was KGB experiments in ball lightning, lab-produced ball lightning, found that it was these fractal patterns of wiring that would create this closed electromagnetic loops that would cause the energy not to disperse like mm-hmm. we're used to with radio waves, which just go out and out, but the opposite, they would go inwards mm-hmm. and create another type of effect, which creates persistent ball lightning. Now, one more thing about the ball lightning, Charlotte, if it's not mm-hmm. interesting enough, there's a black ball lightning too, which
I
is not
heard of that.
To the eye. You can detect it with experiments. And if you went out with magnetometers and stuff at your ghost mm-hmm. sites, you might pick it up without knowing what you'd picked up. But it has a dark mode. And you okay. can see this in the lab-produced ball lightning. So if you're not prepared to be looking for it, it's just going to be like the lack of light. It's going to mm-hmm. look like a dark orb floating in space, or maybe even be completely invisible. So there are a couple forms of these ball lightnings, and there's a dark mode and a light mode. And some people have wondered whether these dark modes are very similar to miniature black holes. I know this sounds like a lot of science fiction. Believe me.
No,
but this is what the researchers have found. This is, it's something like a miniature black hole. And the neat thing about that is it has this sort of unifying effect on a wide range of scientific phenomena that you can see from the micro to the macro. You're dealing with some of the same fundamental forces, not just the type of repulsion that we were taught in physics, like particles repel with magnets. This is an opposite effect that happens at a smaller scale of an intense attraction that causes a lot of secondary physics effects that, you know, we see, and we've, that's sort of, I believe, what we've seen in crop circles and what people see around other types of so-called paranormal phenomena.
This is all really fascinating to me. I love this stuff. You know, when we talk about crop circles and stuff, there's so many, like you said, there's so many around the world now. You know, there's just so many, because I remember when it was really rare to, you know, that people would find them and they'd allegedly find them in their crops. Do you think that, you know, the popularity of the more openness for ghost hunting and all that stuff, those TV shows, has made people want to get out and create these things more so?
I think it's a good point. Yes, I do think people are making a lot of them. And I bet a lot of those people, I'm not saying all of them, there's variations in weather patterns and all sorts of things that lead to changes in even natural phenomena over the years and decades. But sure, I think a lot of people saw those shows, decided to see if they could reproduce the effect. And even in some of those shows, I remember these MIT guys going out and it seemed to affect some of their camera equipment. I wanted to show you a picture of one of ours, the type of lighting that we got when we made a small formation in Hayes, Kansas in 2002, quite a while ago. But I mean, it's very, what is that? What are we seeing?
What is it?
We don't know what it is. It's some weird plasma-like effect that the camera is picking up. That, you know, we can't see this. We can't see this with our eye. Let me see if I can pull up another picture from that. Okay. So here's another example. Let's see if I can get a bigger version of it. That is okay. Let me show you this one. Oh, what is that? Now that is me holding a static meter against the wheat, because we found these static charge changes, electrical changes in these our own man-made crop circles, not just the ones we couldn't explain. But what's all that light at the top? We have no idea.
Wow.
It's just extremely bizarre. We took about 10 pictures like that. It's all, and that was taken with a professional Nikon camera that never made mistakes like that before and never did it again. So it seems unlikely that it just happened to start leaking light then, and then it fixed itself. It's really some sort of strange static effect on our equipment from something we made that we're generating that amount of static. And once you have static, you can end up with ball lightning under certain conditions. So so that's the link between these orbs and the crop circles. Now, I'm not saying, for people that are listening, I'm not saying there is no influence of other types of unexplained actors there. One of the most surprising things to me, Charlotte, is talking to the human circle makers, and they said, we see things out there at night when we're making them that we don't understand. Small craft coming over the formations, almost to like inspect them. Orbs, shadow people. There's a story in Opening Minds I shared where a group of 20-year-old crop circle makers, three of them, go out in a field to make a circle, and they encounter orbs at the edge of the formation they started to make one in this field and they ran away. They'd never made this one. This was a day or two later. They saw these things coming across the field that they thought had to be car headlights. And it unnerved them so much, but they never stopped. They kept coming towards them and coming towards them. They were floating over the crop. Almost as they told me they got the feeling they shouldn't be out there doing this. And they quit.
Interesting.
So even the human circle makers are encountering very strange phenomena out there that, again, suggest that something about making those shapes in a living grain crop creates these novel electromagnetic phenomena.
It's interesting because that makes me think of not Phoenix, but the, like, I don't know if it's Texas or where people can park on the hill and see those orbs come up from a distance.
Marfa.
Yeah, Marfa. It was on the tip of my head.
Yeah, the Marfa, Texas, Browns Mountain, North Carolina. if you just look up those locations, you'll see what people see out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I believe that is part of this whole family of phenomena. It's called Earthlights. Mm-hmm. Some people call them MLOs, mobile luminous objects, to distinguish them from UFOs. Mm-hmm. Hestal in Norway. Look mm-hmm. that up. You'll see a lot of the same types of, and even that compared to Marley Woods, you see the same sort of strange motion of these orb ball lightnings. They're going along, and they'll go up, they'll come back down. It looks like the same thing. Freiberger concluded that this is all the same electromagnetic vortex phenomena. He even thought that it suggested the existence of heavy magnetic particles that haven't been discovered yet empirically mm-hmm. by physics, just because the equations that he's working with sort of necessitate heavy magnetic particles to make sense. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Paul Dirac found in 1929, when his equations predicted electrons with a positive charge. The electrons were used to have a negative charge, and there's protons with a positive charge. Well, mm-hmm. his Dirac equations, his modifications of quantum mechanical equations for relativistic particles and spin, suggested positive particles, the same mass as the electron, that hadn't been discovered. And everyone thought, mm-hmm. that's ridiculous. He even said in mm-hmm. an interview he was kind of reluctant to suggest it because it sounded weird. However, mm-hmm. 2-3 years later, experiments start being done to detect cosmic background radiation. And what's detected? The positron, what Dirac mm-hmm. predicted a couple of years before. Well, our friend Freiberger from SLAC concludes the same thing, that in order to explain ball lightning, there have to be other types of heavy magnetic particles, which we may not have detected yet with our equipment because they're very heavy, but mm-hmm. they do mathematically fit the models. So it would just suggest another type of matter that exists around us that we haven't detected very easily, what, you know, people call dark matter, something mm-hmm. like that. It's in that class of events. So my bent here, and not everyone has to agree with me, is that these phenomena are connected because you see a lot of these similar mobile luminous objects, earth lights and so forth, around these crop circle sites also.
Interesting. My other yep. question is, so if you're getting so much, you know, power at these sites, do people get, you know, because there's a lot of stuff that says that to undergo that type of energy coming off something like that for EMF, it can cause anxiety and headaches and stuff. Has anybody had any reports of that while visiting those areas?
Yes, we do. And there's also reports of people feeling healed.
Okay.
It's both. There are many people who get this sort of elated, jubilant feeling mm-hmm. in crop circles, but other people can go in and feel nauseous, mm-hmm. get headaches, and feel sick for a while. So it's not like a panacea. It's a real energy field. So some of them feel amazing to be in, like walking around a huge fractal spiral. It's kind of cool mm-hmm. if you like these sorts of things. At the same time, there are others that make you feel not so great. Yeah. And I think it's because the energy fields that are created by those shapes are just kind of not planned for because people didn't realize what they were messing around with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it's something to watch out for, but there are people who felt that many people who felt they've had positive energetic experiences being around these crop circles. There were Qigong teachers out there, you know, Chinese Qigong teachers mm-hmm. over the years in these different circles saying that there was a special type of Qi there. And that would make sense, you know, from the research of cold neutrinos, relic neutrinos from cosmic background radiation that that shapes affect the flow of energy. In Chinese culture, it's called feng shui. But I'm suggesting there's a real scientific basis for it.
I do. I agree with you, and I think there's a lot of mysteries here on Earth that we still have to uncover. There's more out there than people think there are.
Absolutely. No, there are a lot. And, I mean, you're hearing this right now in these congressional hearings about UFOs. I mean, we're told the Senate Intelligence Committee has been briefed since 2017, since the New York mm-hmm. Times article came out. And I just heard a lecture from Jay Stratton, former head of the UAP task force within the DOD at the Vernal Phenomicon conference a couple of weeks ago. And I mean, he said, look, these objects are real. They pose a potential risk to aircraft, military practice, training areas, and mm-hmm. so forth. But we don't know what they are. They're intelligently controlled. We're fairly convinced this is not something terrestrial. There's no mm-hmm. evidence it's terrestrial. But then who is it? Mm-hmm. Who's in those craft? Who's directing those craft? Who's in it? Well, it suggests, just like you're saying, there's a lot we don't know. Just because it's not on the news every day doesn't mean it's not happening. I mean, right. We don't know who's in those craft. I mean, are they terrestrially based? Are they extraterrestrially based? Are they interdimensional?
Right.
It's a good question. But I can tell you that it's being taken seriously within the halls of Congress right now. Because at a very minimum, it can cause pilots to have to abort their training missions. Mm-hmm. And we were told at Vernal, I didn't know this, Charlotte, maybe you're from California, the area has a lot mm-hmm. of military bases. Those planes cost $30,000 an hour to keep up in the air.
Right.
So if you have to abort your training mission because there's a small UAP or Tic Tac, like one of the listeners is commenting right now, and you have to abort, you just spent like $60,000 of taxpayers' money and you mm-hmm. can't even do what you went up to train for. Mm-hmm. So at a very minimum, it's causing a lot of fiscal waste of money for the military to abort training missions. So it's being taken seriously. And I imagine all of us alive right now will be seeing the results of this over the coming years and decades of mm-hmm. how our government and society respond to the knowledge that there's other life forms around us mm-hmm. that we, mm-hmm. I mean, we really know almost nothing about.
And then while you were talking, it reminded me, because we still know nothing about them. Because back, the First World War, the Second World War, the pilots were reporting these things, but they were reporting them, but they were thinking that it was from the other side. They were German or they were Russian.
Right. They thought they were German. Germans thought it was ours.
Yeah.
You often find this in warfare that you get these Foo Fighters showing up. Mm-hmm. Not the rock band, but those glowing orbs, whether they are ball lightning or actual mini UFOs, I'm not sure. They look like ball lightning, but that doesn't mean they are. They could be right. mini UFOs. But, you know, the late Robert Odine, Sergeant Robert Odine, that worked for NATO, mm-hmm. Talked about this scenario happening in the 60s where these craft would come out from the direction of East Germany, or along the border of East and West Germany at the time. Mm-hmm. For our younger viewers probably don't remember this, but there was a time when there were two separate countries and East Germany was part of the Soviet bloc, not by choice, but, you know, since World War II ended. Mm-hmm. And Dean said that NATO was so concerned about these objects, they created their own study because they wanted to find out who is this, if it's not the if it's not our adversaries, whose craft are those? Mm-hmm. And they're pretty alarmed if it was our adversaries having technology like that. And they concluded, because Bob got to look at the book that came out of this investigation, that there were four extraterrestrial species visiting the Earth, and it was their craft.
Interesting. The other thing I was going to say about this, along this line, now, you talked about disclosure. Do you think, okay, your lifetime and my lifetime, I mean, let's face it, the clock's ticking on me. The clock's ticking on all the older people. Do you think in your lifetime... You don't look that old to me, Charlotte. Do you think that in your my lifetime that we're going to see some disclosure on this, or you think the government's going to do it real slowly so it doesn't shock anybody?
Well, it may not be the government that does it. I don't know if the government's capable. Jay Stratton told us there's so much bureaucratic inertia within the Pentagon and inside the Beltway in D.C. Mm-hmm. They're almost not capable of doing anything really new. It's just too many old bureaucrats there who don't want to upset the apple cart. But the apple cart is going to get upset. Believe me, there's a lot of witnesses out there we haven't heard from. I've talked to these people. And if they were to testify what they knew and what they'd seen, our sense of reality would be turned upside down overnight. It's that serious. This is a highly classified subject matter. UFOs within the federal government are classified, the whole subject matters. You can't talk about it. And so... yeah, I think it's likely to be similar to what happened with the Soviet Union and East Germany in 89 when the Berlin Wall fell down within a few months of protests starting in East Germany. I mean, it was gone by December 89. The country disappeared. A whole country disappeared because people are so frustrated when there was even rumors that the wall was being opened up for a night or something. You had so many people there, the guards couldn't hold them back anymore, and they had to open the wall up. And I think that could happen with this subject matter, too, eventually. I would, if you had to ask me, you know, if I were a betting man, and I am, as the saying goes, I would say within the next 3 to 5 years, you'll see something important come out. It's not that long. Yeah, you'll see it. There's too many witnesses testifying in front of Senate right now. I mean, these weeks they're doing it, and it's I've heard that the senators have been shown videos of UFOs. They've been shown videos of crash retrievals, some as recently as 89, and bodies. Okay, so they must be kind of wigging out right now because they can't talk about it. No, they know about it. And I think it's just a matter of time before they realize it's in their interest to share it with us.
Now, as a scientist, what made you a believer in that stuff?
It's the preponderance of evidence.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen my share of UFO craft at various locations over the years, whether it's camping or going out with groups doing sky watches. But there's just so much evidence from so many qualified people that this is real, that they've seen it. And some of them have signed NDAs, non-disclosure agreements with the federal government. And they tell me to forget the conversation we just had. I mean, one of the witnesses I mentioned in this new revised edition of Black Swan Ghosts is a former computer inventor, one of the tops on the planet, who told me he had handled UFO crash materials from another part of our galaxy. I mean, the materials could not have been made on Earth. He was convinced. He said it was 1,000 years ahead of our technology. It was a micro atomic engineering, engineering on an atomic scale, which we can't do yet with our equipment. So it's people like that. You know, he said it was 1,000 years ahead of us. And plus the materials are made with isotopic proportions that don't exist on Earth either, from like another part of the galaxy. So I would say, Charlotte, it is many hundreds of conversations with highly qualified people who know what they're talking about, who say it's real, it's classified, and it's coming to a town near you.
Do you think that a lot of our stealth technology, you know, that we have now for our airplanes and stuff, has come from the from you know, them learning from these retrievals?
It's a good question. I mean, the purpose of the retrievals is to get the technology. There's no doubt about it. That's what, you know, militaries thrive on, the latest technology, and this stuff is fast. Who wouldn't want it? You know, what country wouldn't want that? Now, whether they've actually been able to adapt it to our craft, there are people, there's yes and no about it. I mean, I've heard that the B-1B bomber has these static charges on the leading edge of the wings to reduce air friction. Maybe that's a terrestrial invention. The sources I've talked to who are most deeply involved in these programs have told me they haven't figured it out yet. Okay. They haven't figured out this ET technology. The people that know the most about this have told me that's the point, but it's still too far ahead. It's like quantum vacuum engineering. It's literally rearranging the quantum field. Ball lightning does this too, by the way, like we were saying. This is an attempt to technologize ball lightning in essence and recreate that power at will. And it doesn't seem like we've totally figured that out. Maybe someone has, and they're certainly not telling us, but that's what my sources tell us.
Dr. Hine, it is always great to have you on. Thank you so much coming on. I learned so much from you. It's so fun to talk to you. I could talk to you for hours. I could sit here.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it again. And by the way, my blog is newcrystalmind.com.
Okay.
I'll put it in the chat, and people can get signed copies of books and things like that if they want to talk to me or communicate. I'm out on YouTube also. I'm out on YouTube, Jim.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks a lot, Charlie. Thank you so much. See you next time.
Okay, bye.
Have a great one. Oh, where'd it go? There it goes. Buttons. We do new technology. Anyway, that's always great to talk with him. It's so fun. So fun. Tomorrow I'll be back, usual time, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, with Medium Nancy Matz. We're going to be talking about Haunted Tombstone, Arizona. And I've got some stories about that. I've happened to make a trip quite a while back to Tombstone with a friend of mine who's very sensitive. And Nancy at that time lived in Arizona, so she met us halfway, took us into Tombstone, took us through, and we had some very interesting things happen. And we kind of let my friend, because she was just starting out with her abilities, we kind of let my friend do the walk around, and then Nancy, of course, would say, oh, yeah, that's correct, and, you know, that's not correct. But we had something very interesting happen, just her and my friend and I, when we were walking around Main Street in Tombstone, so I can share that with you guys tomorrow. So that'll be our usual time, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Okay, if you haven't done so already, and some of you have it, come on over to California Haunts Patreon, check out what we have to offer. I'm going to be posting some new video over there for you guys to check out, and come on and join up. We're looking for patrons over there to keep the lights on and all that good stuff. So if you could help me out with that, that'd be great. If not, that's cool too. We love having you. We love having you visit. Mike was here tonight. Jerry was in the chat room. So it's been a fun night. And for all you guys that are too shy to come in and chit-chat with us, you know, in the chat room, welcome, welcome, welcome. All right? All right. So if you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hated the show, share it with 5 of your enemies. We are equal opportunity here. Just want to get the word out of our little old show. And again, I will see you tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Pacific with Casual Friday and Medium Nancy Matz. Let me cue this up, and away we go. See you guys.